Right, we're here for another episode of Counterpoints. Although I do actually have a cold for this one, so we'll see. Here's the thing. I don't use that as an excuse, though. That's why at the end of the episode, you will all just think I'm like Michael Jordan in that finals one time when he had the flu and he still just won the game anyway. Just to understand that I'm built different. But there might be a point where I sneeze or I have to mute the mic or whatever. As people might have seen with the Sword Snake about it, there was something similar happened there. Anyway, point is, Pimp, CS continues, so I continue. And I actually have to say, even though, here's what's funny, mate. Another reason why I always hated all the pushback against best of five finals, because obviously now it's also announced that the major's going to have them and that that might even be a thing going forwards. And obviously it's pretty much default that every big event, even some of the tier 1.5 lands, have the BO5 final. Look, I get that the real reason people accepted it is because MR12 is just shorter, so it's just not as big a deal. But one thing I always thought was the most nonsense excuse ever was, you know, when everyone used to do that thing where on the one hand, they acted like they all take 5 hours to play, but then they would also complain and go, but there's lots of boring 3-0s though. And here's what I don't get. Bro, this event that we just watched right now, the IEM Chengdu, is a great example of where it doesn't matter if the final's 3-0. Like, bro, those first two games could have been won by Vitality. Like, that was a wide open game. Like, I know on the paper it looks like 3-0 looks like super conclusive. Like, wow, Fury just, like, mate, if you watch that game, there's so much back and forth, and that was amazing. Like, that was a deceptive scoreline to me, mate. I actually kind of, look, there was a lot of mistakes made, but I actually thought for excitement value, that final was quite banging, actually. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. It's funny to say, because I think I was, and I think I still am one of the most, the biggest advocate for not having best of five grand finals when we had MR15. I actually, I disliked it a lot. You know, I know for certain arenas.
Is it because you played in one or something like that? What's your angle for not liking it?
No, yeah, I think we disagree just on the whole concept. But I think a best of five game should never be able to last like 6 or 7 hours, which could be the case. I think
that's true. That's bullshit.
And I also do think that certain CEOs took advantage of it from a point that, you know, if it's Katowice or if it's Cologne, I don't mind it being a best of five, but it should be something extraordinary. Or if it only happened, you know, twice a year at the major, then okay. But when it was MR15 and best of five grand finals, and as you said, like not all of them took 5 hours, but most of them took between 4 and 6 hours. And some of them even went on 7. You know, I simply thought that was too long, also from an interest perspective in Counter-Strike. So I guess that's where I'm at. Now, though, I'm fully on board with you. Best of five is a no-brainer with MR12. And I agree. I think that's one of the most underrated things that I still haven't seen anyone pick up of Chengdu. I think Vitality lost that grand final 3-0, but I think they could have won a 3-0, you know, almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the key moment in that game, I was obviously doing the game with Yanko on the desk, Ancient, big surprise, Vitality gambling. One could argue that was stupid, probably was, you know, considering them being the favorite. But they were leading 11-7, and then Fallen did a 1v2 and survived with 9 HP on Ancient. A 1v2 that Fallen never should have won, a 1v2 that Vitality should have won, would have been 12-7. They would have closed out Ancient, wouldn't have been an issue, wouldn't have been a conversation. And then I think whatever would have happened from that part, and almost maybe Furia would have won the following two maps, but I think Vitality still coming into Nuke and coming into Mirage would have been the favorites to win that series. So I think that key moment on Ancient destroyed whatever, you know, whatever confidence was left in Vitality. And I also think it gave Furia a belief that, hey, we can actually win this grand final. And that was the biggest mistake Vitality did. They allowed Furia from the first map to get a taste of, this is possible. Whereas had they won Ancient, I think Furia would have been left with a feeling that, okay, this is the final boss. We're not ready for it yet. Vitality is a different caliber of team. Maybe we'll make the final close. Maybe we'll get a map. But they gave them a sense of victory. And that was technically Fallen winning that clutch. And the worst part about that was that I think he was... Was he 4-15 or something on Ancient? Like, he was having an absolute stinker of a map. It did absolutely nothing to help out his team in terms of the fragging department. And then he shows up winning a 1v2. And to me, that was the most important round in the entire game that changed the course of it. So I agree with you. I think it was, first and foremost, a great game, a great series. Yes, it was a 3-0, but Overpass was sick. First map was sick for a lot of different reasons. Second of all, I think it could have been a game that could have gone 3-0 for Vitality or 3-1 for Vitality had that not happened, you know. And I know it's easy to say there's always a couple of key rounds in a game like that, but given the context of Ancient, first map in the series, first time for Furia in a grand final of that caliber, etc., I think that was the moment where they get a taste of victory, and unfortunately for Vitality, they allowed them to.
No, I mean, there's a bunch in that final. Like, first of all, I actually totally agree. If you ever go back, those first two maps of the final, look, all three, I agree, technically could have been won. And also, if the other team goes up 2-0, it changes psychologically the whole, like, landscape, etc. But if you even just watch the first two games, the Ancient game and then the Inferno game, these are just decided by pretty much what you're describing. Like, both of them just get decided by, it feels like every time it becomes a 1v1 in the game, Furia won it. Like, but it would just be the most basic 1v1. Like, what would be crazy is there'd be, like, two or three rounds in a row where Vitality could look awesome on the T side of any of these maps. Like, they'd be hitting the sights. By the way, Ziwu was completely rolling on the first map as well. Like, he was hitting all the shots that everyone loves to see from him, Monacy, now Molodoy, etc. They do all that, like, super quick. It's not even like this is why the terminology quickscope I've never liked. I always say no scope. He wasn't doing the quickscope where you don't see the scope, but he has that style like Monacy where he can just really quickly scope in, aim and lock onto them, and it just looks super slick. I think any AWP that has that always looks fucking amazing, in my opinion. You don't have to be scoped in already. You can just sort of like do that smooth motion. But this guy, Ziwu, had it rolling like that. He was hitting so many highlight clips. But there'd be a couple of rounds if you ever go and watch this, because most of the time it's Vitality like getting back in the game with the score going up to like 9-9, 10-10 sort of area. The second that happens, though, out of nowhere, you'll just get a round, one of those ones where it looks like bad CS, like everyone runs in the site, everyone shoots everyone, but it's so quick, like, you know, we lose two people, they lose two, he loses one, we lose one. And then at the end, suddenly it's a 1v1 and Fury just won every single one, bro, I swear. In fact, Fallen himself won two or three of those in the game where it wasn't even like some exceptional round. Like, he didn't win like the craziest 1vx ever. He just was the last person to shoot the last person as they ran around a wall or whatever. And the crazy, it was those slimmest margins. But yeah, that was actually what made Fury a better in the final, because I do think if you're Vitality, you must be sitting there going like, bro, we've done this twice now. We've done this twice. We almost fucked up before ourselves. Like, this is sus. Like, that's the big thing I'd be asking if I was... Here's the thing, Pimp. If you're Vitality, the question you don't need to ask yourself, actually, is can we win trophies? Like, you could have won three at least on the way into this major and been right back in an awesome position, like, on paper, of, like, we're the dominant team, we win. I agree with Fallen's statement before the final. They are the final boss. Like, everyone still feels like that, no matter what they think about Spirit or Falcons or whatever. But I'll tell you what, if I'm Vitality myself, like, we used to just always close these games out. Like, we had close games in the first season, but they always got closed, you know what I mean? Like, we always did make the hero play. We always won the 1v1. We always won the... By the way, they even had a couple of rounds in where we're Tech Nines in this final, bro. They still didn't win it. Like, if I'm Vitality, on the one hand, I'm so close to being awesome, but I'm also, like, this close from winning some of these games.
Yeah, I think that's my sentiment from that grand final as well, to be honest. I feel like it was Vitality getting a taste of their own medicine. You said it yourself on Inferno. I think the score was 11-10 when Furia won a forced by Tech Nine running into the B-bomb site, you know, and you think to yourself, that's a round that I've seen play out so many times where it's Vitality winning.
Absolutely.
You know? Those are the types of games that they used to win all the time. And that's also, you know, part of this whole, you know, how dominant were Vitality? Yes, if you just look at their results from the tournaments in the beginning of the season, obviously dominating, you know, arguably no one can put a finger on that. But not all the games and all the victories in quarterfinals, semifinals, finals were dominant in the fashion they won them. It was a lot of close games, you know, it came down to close series, even versus Mouse, you know, when they were the first contender, or the few times they played other teams in the grand finals as well. The Falcons won in Melbourne, right? A game they should have lost, to be completely honest,
where
they were down 12-6 and Nuke in the fifth map, you know. So I feel like Vitality just got a taste of their own medicine, and sometimes that's all it takes, you know. Just a team that they had that aura of being almost unbeatable. They knew that, okay, even though we're down 12-6 versus Falcons, fifth deciding map, we're going to come back because we've done it before, you know. Almost like the same thing that Dupree tried to describe when he was in Astralis, and that kind of aura you have around you. But the second that is not working out anymore, the second you lose a couple of those games, you also as a player yourself stop to believe that. You don't think, you know, oh, we're down 11-6, we're going to come back and we're going to win this game. You're down 11-6 and now you're thinking, fuck, we fucked up, we're going to lose this game. You know, whereas before you actually believed that you'd still win. So I think I can't take anything away from Furia, because I think, you know, from where they come from and how well they're playing right now, no one saw that coming, but I do think that Vitality, if I were to be completely honest, I think they lost more to themselves in that grand final than they lost to Furia playing extraordinary well. It wasn't like Vitality couldn't compete with it. It was more so Vitality, you know, got a taste of their own medicine, and as Rob's also said post the game, you know, lacked that extra 5% to close it out, which I agree with, you know. Same sentiment when they lost in Cologne versus Mouse. It wasn't Mouse beating Vitality, it was Vitality beating Vitality. And I think that's the biggest issue right now, and that's the biggest threat they have coming into the major, because I still believe that if Vitality play at 95% of their capacity, they're most likely going to win the major. But if they're going to be beat by themselves, then that's the biggest threat they have right now. Not necessarily Falcons, Furia, Mouse for that matter. I think the biggest opponent Vitality have is themselves.
No, the funny thing is that because of Spirit just actually looking like a bit of a dud so far with the new roster, it actually does again open the way right up if you're Vitality, because put it this way, if Falcons won this event, maybe it would have been different, but it isn't. Like right now, if you're Vitality, you should win, and then it's if you don't win, who will beat you? Yeah, and yes, it could be a Furia upsets you or an Aurora. Or so. Yeah, we get that angle, but I agree with you. That's why I actually think if you're Vitality, it's more like self-reflection than like what did the opponent do? Because, bro, I think you even saw it in this tournament. Think about the two series they played against Mouse here in Chengdu. The first one that they lost, like, bro, that was even just a legit loss. Like, they also were in a close game. They could have won, but they didn't. And then the second one, they had to do almost exactly what you're talking about with the famous Falcons comeback. They had to do that mad nuke comeback on map one where they did the Europe. They also did the miracle come all the way back into the game to quickly steal that map. Otherwise, they could have lost both times to Mouse. Like, that was totally doable, mate. And this is the same Mouse that every analyst I know thinks is slowly dropping off and isn't a threat to win the major at this point in time because they just don't win trophies for whatever reason. So, like, I would have concerns if I'm in Vitality. The problem is, though, Pimp, this is what I find so tough, though. Like I say, they do have moments in these games, though, where they do play awesome CS, though. You just think, like if I was Apex or Xstars, this is a tricky puzzle because you don't want to change too much stuff. Like, obviously, the essence of the team is still there, and you do have games where you look like old Vitality and you win the same way.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think Vitality should change anything. I don't think they will change anything. The whole ancient thing in the grand final as well.
Go on, talk about that. What do you think about that? Because I saw coming in, like, well, this is going to be weird because we don't get that much overlap in the modern day now. It's normally just two people just ban overpass because they haven't tried it yet. That's normally what you get in the current scene. So it's very rare you actually get two sets of people who ban ancient. And also the cringe thing about this, bro, is... being as Vitality were the ones who let me check actually, were they the first ones? Let me check if they were first in the veto. Fury were the first ones. So that means Vitality were the ones that confirmed there would be ancient played. That essentially they chose it if you're a fan, right? Right. That is actually pretty big. I know what you mean, Pimp, because I have to say, I totally get why you do that if you're Furia. You can gamble on that if you're Furia and go, hey, go for it. But I'll tell you one thing I found weird, bro, is when I watched that game and I'm watching like KSR or pull off, I'm just thinking, bro, the old Furia used to play this map even. Like, remember they were playing this at that like Rio Major like all those years ago. That's why KSR himself had like that epic fucking game against Heroic where he was just going crazy. I know what you mean. I thought that was a really weird gamble for Vitality of all people to do. It's one thing if Furia does it, you know, and then you go, okay, well done, Furia. You get this because the map they removed was Train. Bro, Vitality, the old Vitality, used to fucking love this map last season. They were all over this one. They never lost on it, right?
Yeah, it's puzzling to be completely honest. I mean, the only silver lining I could come up with was that if you ever wanted to do something like that or test it out, you know, you do it now. You do it at IMG.
Oh, you do this before the major, you think, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And that's like that's. Okay. Far-fetched almost in a sense, but I think it was unnecessary. It's logic, yeah. I think it was unnecessary. I don't think there was any reason to do it for Vitality. And I think, as I said before, the biggest mistake they made with that. But there's two sides to it, actually, because as you said, like it's actually Vitality confirming that Ancient will be played in this series. But I'm pretty sure that Vitality thought to himself, that's going to be the fourth, maybe the fifth map.
Yeah.
No one is going to pick it, right? So then it's going to be randomized to the fifth map. And I think if you're Apex at that point, you think, well, we're going to win this series before we go to a fifth map. So we take this massive gamble, but don't worry, guys, we're not going to play it. Where the big balls come into play is Fury actually picking it as the first map in this series and forcing it in to make sure that it will be played within the first three maps. I did not see that coming, and I think that's what caught off guard.
That move is gangster, though, because I do think if you then win it like they did, look, it could have backfired, you could have lost it. But when you then win that, then if you're Vitality, you're like, oh, now we're 1-0 down, what the fuck was the point of that? Like, you fucking put them on tilt, bro, yeah.
Exactly, especially considering that Overpass was coming in as the third map, which Furia have won 11 times in a row.
Yeah.
They're the best team in the world on the map. So I think I get why Vitality I get why it's tempting to gamble with it, but I really think that they didn't expect it to be put into place that early, and I think that's what fucked them all over. And then you could just hear it from Rob's as well. I think Janko pointed it out in our desk segment as well, that Rob's in the interview leading into the game with Freya was like, yeah, we know how to play it, and we practice it a little bit, and yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, two questions later, he goes, yeah, we have to figure out where people are playing, you know,
before heading
into the game. It's like, yeah. So which one is it, bro? Like, have you practiced or have you not, you know? And you could see on the warm-up pictures as well that he was, you know, practicing smokes and all that kind of shit. So they have no fucking clue what to do when they came into the map. And another point I wanted to bring as well is that gamble is so much more worth it for Furia for two reasons. One, them being the underdog. No one expected him winning a best of five grand final. That's obvious. But as you said as well, it's a map that Furia back in the day used to play. It's a map that Fallen have a lot of experience on.
Absolutely.
It's a map that Kizarada and Guren played. It's even a map that Yekinda played.
Whereas if you saw that stat, it might even have been you. I can't remember who posted it. Someone posted a stat when they showed that like Apex had like never fucking played. And he played it like two times or something ever, something mental like that.
Apex had never played it ever in his pro career, and Saibu has only played it in a show match.
Fucking hell, that's crazy. By the way, fair play to Zimu, that he was actually pretty good on the map, I've got to say.
Yeah. Even had Ben look into like, okay, so they have never played it officially, right, as a team. Apex never called on it, never played in a game on it. Saibu played, obviously, a lot of Face It, but not a map that he was forcing. And I thought to myself, okay, maybe if Vitality actually have been practicing Ancient, then you'd probably seen the Face It stats that Apex have been forcing Ancient on Face It. But he played, was it three different Ancient game over the span of 2 months on Face It? So, like, it came out of nowhere. Right. Like, it literally came out of nowhere. And I think it wasn't worth it. You know, even if Vitality would have won Ancient, I would still be saying afterwards that was a gamble that was not worth it. Like, there was no need to do it. I guess why it would have been fun, you know, also to call out Chicken against Furia and maybe set themselves up better for a potential grand final at the major. But there was no reason. Like, it's such a long game and so far-fetched that even if they thought it was going to be the fifth map, like, why would you risk that? You know, Furia is competitive enough to pressure you, and you're not playing your A game right now. So why are you, like, had it been peak Vitality in the beginning of the season, maybe I would have bought into it. You know, you're so much better than everyone else that, yeah, you'll figure it out. And if you lose a map, you go down 1-0-1, you'll win the favors 3-1 anyway. But that's not the Vitality we're seeing right now. As you said, lost to Maus, they lost a map to Astralis, they lost a map to everyone they played against throughout the tournament almost. So I feel like Vitality were playing a game they just weren't ready for and got punished for it, which I kind of like to see.
No, here's the thing. I don't even hate conceptually the idea of, like, we're trying this for the major. Because my logic would be, if you had have done what they almost did, if you almost stole it, basically, and you win, like, off, even if it's a bullshit, like, we got through a vibe sort of thing, that still might make, if at the major, when you're in the BO3s in, like, the quarterfinals, if you play another team that have to ban Ancient, they're almost certainly just going to ban it because you're better than them and you've shown, like, fuck, maybe they can actually play it and win on it, etc. But the problem now is, now that you lost it, like, forget about that. Like, that's basically not going to happen. So I know what you mean. Like, I do also think if you're Vitality, bro, you don't need to do this. That's the other thing. Like, you could have afforded to just say, actually, we'll ban it. The rest of the map was all fine for us. And then let's just see what order we played at that point in time, basically. There's nothing. By the way, one thing I want to talk about is the obvious angle here is, it's not like, I'll frame it this way. The way you know that Furia has been a success to a degree no one expected is if I'd have told you some of these details, like, look, here's what the overall rating for the team will be at some of the events this year. Here's the map pool, but they've got like four or five maps they're really good on now, including, as you say, they've got like a couple that are more like the specialist maps even, but they've got them all on their side so they can go on the train and the overpass and all the maps people don't want to play. If I told you all this, at the end I said they win a bunch of events. The obvious thing you would say is, right, it must just be Kayserato as a load of MVPs. It's like, no, that's the part no one can ever predict. I don't care who you are, even they themselves. That's why I appreciate that Fallen just tells that story of, like, we just lost like a random scrim to this guy. We're like, who the fuck is this kid? They don't even pretend they saw, like, oh, that's Messi over there, that little 5-year-old kid dribbling around. They don't do that bullshit thing I hate, right? Because nobody could predict how good the Molodoy guy is, mate. He is way too good. Like, it isn't even just like people, I think people like underrate how crazy a pickup this is. This isn't even just like when we all say, you know, just like we talk like Fnatic and Nip, just go and get yourself an Eastern European AWPer, just hope they're one of the better ones, and then you give them a bit of time. First of all, bro, if you notice, I do go crazy about this on Twitter. I understand that people want anime storylines, but Pimp, I'm sorry, mate, there is no hyperbolic time chamber. Fallen didn't teach Molodoy how to shoot the AWP, bro. That is the dumbest fucking narrative fans are doing, because, like, Molodoy, the joke is it's the other way around, guys. What actually happened was Molodoy is already so cracked at the AWP that Fallon was like, you know what, actually, just have the gun. Even though I've used it for like 15 years, I think you should literally use it in this team because you're clearly better. And by the way, he is. It's like when we did that episode of Snake and Banter where I brought Fallon on. People think I was just bantering with him because after like we compliment each other or whatever, I immediately tell him, like, I think Molodoy is better than you ever were even at your peak. And then even Fallon goes like, no, fucking come on, Thorin, because he thinks I'm being like... I'm not even saying that to be rude. I'm actually saying that as a compliment to Molodoy, Pib, because I actually think he is just like unbelievably cracked. Like, the joke is the closest person to him in the current modern game, if you actually did take the nipples, is like Monacy or something, bro. Like, the speed he fires at is too fast. And yet it's so precise too. Like, mate, the amount of times he does those peaks as an AWPer, where normally in any normal game, even like at a lower level, you see the guy like peek on the edge of the box, but then you don't hit. He hits them and kills them almost every time, bro. It's nuts. Like, I genuinely think, like, when considering we last all spent the last year and a half talking about there's like three AWPers, and there's another one, bro. This one is actually good enough to be like, excuse me, Shiro, excuse me, Toshi, I'm going to the front of the queue, mate. It's basically gonna, as far as I can tell, if he keeps the form up of this season, bro, the story of AWPing will just be who is better between Zewu, Monacy, and Molodoy. Like, these three, they just got it, bro. He's got that star AWPer quality that, like, you just don't find these players. But I actually think, because last night after I watched this, the match yesterday, the Chengdu one, I went and watched actually the POVs of Molodoy in that final. Mate, they're even better. Like, genuinely, if someone's a fan and they know like what good AWPing looks like, the POVs are mega. Like, you would think this guy was like at home playing the comfiest game ever with the Diet Coke and the fucking chair. Like, he's in a fucking IEM final in China and he is just so smooth with it, mate. It's unbelievable. Like, he doesn't look. Also, there's another thing. The guy doesn't look like pressure even fucking affects him, mate. No, I know he did at that major where he kind of bombed it against Payne. In these matches now, he's just fucking. He's actually. There's another thing, mate. He's barely played the game at a top level. He already has the whole, like, you win, do the showmanship, you stand up and do the... Oh, mate, this guy... I actually don't think you can glaze this guy enough. He's, like, the next star, mate. He's really... That's why I said on Twitter, like, he's going to be one of the best AWPers of all time, as far as I can tell. This guy's just got it all.
I mean, there's nothing that suggests he won't be, you know, as you said, there's nothing that suggests that he won't be in the conversation to be a top three player in the world next year. If he continues at the level he's at now, then that's almost a guarantee. If he gets better, then who knows if he can get on the level of Monacy, Saibu, and contest with them, you know, for that role. I agree. I think it's almost impossible to glaze him too much or give him too many compliments, because I even made the case on Twitter as well, and I thought that to myself, and we didn't have time to discuss it, and I would love to hear Janko's take on it, and maybe yours as well. But personally, I think that Molodoy is obviously breakout player of the year. That's a no-brainer. But I think the Molodoy pickup is a better pickup than Rob's going to Vitality. You know, and the reason why I'm saying that, or at least my argument for that, is that Rob's took Vitality from being an already great team to obviously being the best. And that's just the way it is. And obviously what they did in the beginning of the season, he didn't have to close that big of a hole, because you still had Taivu, you still had the foundation, you still had Messi playing for you and Flamesy being in his role. So I feel like Rob's came in and obviously added what they lacked, you know, and that was a great pickup. But I would say that Molodoy coming into Furia, and that's not to downplay the impact of Yekinda as well and the impact of Fallen on the rifle, yada, yada, yada. But Molodoy took Furia from being irrelevant. Molodoy took Furia from being a team that wouldn't make playoffs, that you, like, whenever you did a death segment, you'd be like, fucking hell, I have to cover a Furia game again, and I'm going to say the same thing over. Yes. Maybe if Keserato plays well, maybe if Euro plays well, then they have a chance of making it. Like, it's just the same over and over again. And he took that Furia to now be an elite team that can potentially win the major. I think having a player that has that much impact, to me, that's a better pickup than Rob's coming into Vitality and fully releasing that potential. And it may sound a bit controversial, because Vitality may be the best team to ever do it, you know, depending on how you look at it in those 6 months. But I think the way I would describe it is that there's only a few players in the world, only Molodoy and maybe Monacy or Saibu, if you were to join Furia, could make that leap, could make them as good as they are today. Whereas I think there's definitely 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 players. Yeah, theoretically, Vitality could have picked up, they would have done the same thing. And that's not to take anything away from Rubs, but he's, you know, he's not that unique in that sense. And then again, he is. So it's a very fine balance, you know, trying to compare the two. But that's where I want to give my flowers. I think Molodoy is arguably contender for one of the best pickups of all time, you know, even contesting with Rubs to Vitality, contesting with Magis to Astralis back in the days, or Glaive to Astralis, depending on how you want to define that era. Like, I feel like he's that good, and I feel like he's taking Furia out of a misery they've been in for 5 years. And let's be completely honest, you said it, Fallon said it, no one saw that coming. Like, Fallon was ready to retire. Cesarato has just accepted that he's going to be a great player, never winning shit. Yuri, he's going to be a great player, never winning shit. I think they all would have accepted that if this Molodoy kid could take them from being a top 15 team to top 10, they would have been happy, you know. Just getting into the playoff occasionally, they would have been happy. Now they find themselves in a position where, realistically, their goal should be to win the major. Their goal should be to win another major, which is crazy. And that is... That to me is arguably one of the most surprising things, and at least that argument is why I think it's fair to have the conversation whether Molodoy to Furia is a better pickup than Rops to Vitality. It's two different cases and very hard to go against Rops, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like Molodoy is, as you said, like you can't credit him enough, and if he continues to develop, like he's getting better and better still, like who knows where the ceiling is at with this kid.
No, by the way, there's another thing. Like, if you think about where Fury was at before this event, they were more in the camp with, like, G2, Mongols, if they'd have had Senzu, where it's like, look, you obviously, from your event wins, we can see that you could win the major if everything goes right. So basically, we were going to give all these teams, Aurora, you all get, like, the dark horse status, where it's like, essentially, if you do something like this, like, the right players on fire, the right map works for you in the event, and then you get the right bracket, then you could win the... The difference is, if you're Furia now, like, bro, you're, like, right... Bear in mind, we have no clue where Spirit's going to be at. Falcons, can they close the deal? Mouse doesn't close it. You can be right in that bunch already for me, mate. Like, there's still downsides. I have seen games where sometimes the firepower doesn't show up and they look a bit whatever. Also, even though the map pool looks awesome into a lot of teams, it also means that a lot of teams get maps that they like against them too, etc. But with that said, like, if you just look at the last, like, month and a half, bro, they've beaten basically everyone. It's only, as far as I can tell, Mouse, because they've drawn them only once. That's the only team they've lost to at the top. Everyone else, they've beaten me. They've beaten Vitality, Falcons, Na'Vi, fucking everyone go down the list. I don't think they played Spirit, but Spirit take care of themselves at the moment. Like, no, if you're Furia, that's the craziest part, is actually, you don't, even though people were overhyping that part, like, I'll give you the joke angle. Here's where my brain just works differently to the rest of all of you, right? Every fan saw that post pimp that was like, it's been 3,016 days since Fallen was in an IEM final. And their brain mate made them type the tweet, like, see, Fallen dominating after all these years. And it's like, the post says he hasn't done anything for like half a decade. What? Like, that's where we're just different people, homie. Like, I'm just not like that. Like, that's it. It says the opposite. It actually says he's basically irrelevant forever. And now, look, he can do it the other way around. He can go after all these years. He's now back at the top. That's a cool story. Some people got that the wrong way around. Some people made that sound like he was always at the top. In which case, guys, what's the story then? Like, I think we'd all know if he'd been at the top the whole time. Because I'll tell you one thing that is way too premature. These people doing episodes on podcasts that are like, is Fallen the GOAT IGL? Like, what, after this last month and a half? Like, bro, fucking put it back in your pants, will you? Like, you're crazy you ever had that conversation. That is a fucking wild convo. But I do agree. I do think the idea of the team, though, actually winning, like, that's what's incredible, bro, is the idea that Fallen as an IGL could, like, for real, could win another major, essentially, like, 9 years after he did it before. That would be fucking insane, like, but I think that is actually plausible, Pimp. Like, I have to say, the more and more I watch this team, the more I like them to even have a chance to do it. Yeah, I do think they need the right bracket draw, but I'm pretty sure I do think like they'll be in the semis. I'll give them that at least. So you've got the crack at it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think like one of the main reasons for that being is that Vitality is not playing their game right now. And seemingly, you know, Falcons, I think Falcons is still one of the biggest threats to Vitality and still a threat to win the major, but seemingly Furia just have something for playing against the Falcons. I don't know if it's stylistic. I don't know if it's already a mental game where they beat them three times in a row, but it does feel like that Falcons have not really been able to play their A game against Furia, and sometimes you got to give credit to the team they're playing. You know, it can't always be like, oh, Modesty didn't show up today, so Falcons didn't play well. Well, maybe there's something in the approach of Furia. Maybe it's Molodoy who's actually been able to shut him down, you know, a couple of times, then make Modesty not play well in that specific matchup, that then make Falcons not being able to win Furia. So I think Furia is the way I would describe them heading into the major, and it's a team that I can see them lose to Mouse. I can see them lose to Spirit. I can see them lose to Vitality. I can't necessarily see them lose to Falcons, whereas I feel like for Vitality, it's the opposite. Like, I feel like Vitality are going to beat everyone, maybe not Furia, you know. So they're a little bit more dependent on the bracket draw. They're a little bit more dependent on the day-to-day shape, whereas I feel like for Vitality, they can even in a game where they don't play the A game, like we saw against Mouse, they can still find a way to win, you know, and they still have that psychological edge against Mouse, you know, that regardless, I think if they were to face each other in a major semi-final, Mouse could be leading, I don't care how much, they will find a way to lose that game as they've done so many times, you know, and I think that's a big hurdle for the Mouse camp. And I don't think Furia have that psychological advantage against any teams maybe outside of Falcons right now. So in that department, if you were to compare Furia and Vitality, there's still, you know, certain arrows and certain things pointing in the direction of Vitality. But as you said, it'd be a fucking fool if you didn't acknowledge the fact that Furia is one of the heavy favorites to win the major. Like there's Vitality and then there's Furia and then there's the rest. You know, you can then argue that maybe Falcons and I don't even know if Mouse have separated themselves from Spirit, but it's like in my head, it's like two top dogs in Vitality, Furia, then you have Falcons below that, you have Mouse below that, you have Spirit below that, and then all the shitters after that, you know, in Na'Vi, Aurora, G2, who have occasionally shown that on a good day they can do well. G2 did it in London, have not really been able to replicate that since. So in terms of winning the major, I the more we narrow it in and the more I see, and it'll be easier to conclude after Rivals here in Hong Kong as well, but it does feel like it's a two-man race, potentially a four-man race, depending on who shows up on the day.
By the way, let's talk a bit about Falcons then, because obviously it's always a spicy topic anyway. I do feel like, bro, here's the problem I have. If someone just says the following statement, like, the reason I hate Falcons is just the whole Saudi angle, and I have... Or if it's not the Saudi angle, the other one is, I just think they wasted a lot of money to do the... Like, look, I can appreciate both those angles. I think they are both... They have some level of validity to them. But one thing I do hate, bro, is... I see this all the time. People talk like this season was the first season, mate. Like, you would think this team never wins a fucking game. Like, this reminds me of people who actually, funny enough, along similar lines, just are just driven politically. It's like, listen, mate, I don't think you have to like Donald Trump, but he never did anything right ever. He just did like 100 bad things in a row. And even he won, that was just an accident and he's a moron. Like, bro, just listen to yourself when you say that. You know what I mean? It just sounds too ridiculous. So similarly with Falcons. Like, I get why people prey on their downfall. But it's me, as a sports fan, the joke is pimp. The only reason I even gave Man United 1 second of reprieve from hating them with all of my force was because I like Ronaldo and they got him back for a while. And that then became just a new reason to hate them 10 times more now, bro, even though they're not a threat, they haven't fucking done anything in like 15 years or whatever. But the problem I have is this: people are underrating Falcons, bro. Like, they, because the problem is, until they win, some people are just never going to give them any of this. Like I said, they're gonna get any credit. It's always just going to be $10 million wasted. Oh, Sonic, what a fraud. Fucking Monacy, you should have stayed in GT. It's all those that we've all heard them. Like, there's a million fan narratives that go against Falcons. But my problem is this, bro. They actually have the opposite problem to that, in my opinion. It's not that they suck most of the time. Their problem is this, pimp. They either hit you like a fucking Mack truck, 2-0 your ass, and they're doing this to a lot of people right now. All three of the stars show up on the server. Monacy's like the best in the whole fucking world right now, by the way. Then you get like Keisuke, rarely has bad games. And then Nico, actually, he's up and down, but he has some fucking good matches again. People forget this isn't the Nico that started the season where he was looking really bad. Like, actually, he's corrected that all. And that's why if you ever look on that top players stats page, they always have like three of the top 10 or top 11 or whatever. Like, they consist to get the firepot. The problem is this, pimp. The second they do run into a team that can beat them, and it's in the semi-final every time right now, they just collapse. That's the problem. That's the part where I get the memes. I get the radar memes. Those are all good. It's true. There are so many moments, and this is a bad sign, pimp, where if I just show you this screenshot, you remember, fuck, wait a minute, oh, that was it. And at this point, they do have about five of those, bro. Like, it feels like they do one every tournament. They do one crazy round, which does look like you're like a fucking bad face at pick-up, where you don't even look at people communicate, or people don't like they know what their job is, or who's going first. So I'm giving a slight olive branch to the haters. I do know why they hate on them, but the problem is, I think, Pip, this is a perfect angle because they didn't win this tournament. There's this next one, Blast, which is a great chance to get over that, and then there's obviously the major.
Yeah.
I do think, you, to be fair to Falcons, you have to give them like dark horse status for the major, because I do think that what I just said, there's still a world where they actually just front run and just fucking just ride over the top of a bunch of these teams, mate. Like, I could absolutely see what happens in these tournaments happen to Falcons. I could see them in the semis or the final, losing two. You pick one of these teams that beats them. Fury is a great example. Losing to one of these squads, and then yeah, everyone saying the same thing. What, you spent all that money just to come third and not win? But at the same time, I could also see them, bro, playing like a bunch of teams in the quarterfinals and just smashing them and being like, get out the way. Like, we're all going to the semis, the final. Like, where are you at on Falcons? I find them a really tough team, mate, because like I say, there are things to hate on, but there's also some really positive things too for my money.
That's the thing. And I don't know, I've always tried to distance myself from that, you know, and evaluate a team, you know, objectively as I can, you know, because yeah, you're right, there's a lot of different reasons why you could hate or dislike Falcons. Whether you go with the Saudi angle, the money angle, et cetera, et cetera. I don't really care, but that also, as you said, like, it also, it's then you evaluate a team with a motive behind it, you know, or you put your personal agenda upon a team, you know, you put a personal agenda, a guy like Kiyosuke or Tessis or Kixon for that matter. And like, I can't really work with that. I don't really give a fuck, to be completely honest. So if I just look at Falcons as a team, I still think, and I agree with you, I think they're severely underrated. I think you're right in saying that they have this habit of either showing up full force and 2-0-ing people, as we saw in Chengdu, where they looked like the best team after the group stage, no doubt. You know, into the semifinal, they were the best playing team, and then they face a team that is maybe as good as them, and then they lose a couple of rounds, or they have, you know, Monesi not showing up for half an Inferno, or whatever that may be. Inferno, in particular, right now, is a weakness in the map pool, something they have to fix for the major if they want to win it. And then they crumble, but it's still... Then crumbling is what? Placing third behind Maus, Vitality, and now Furia. It's not bad, you know. They've been in a grand final versus Vitality. They finished third at EWC. Yeah. And I know people say, yeah, that was just a third place decider. Who gives a fuck? Well, there was $1 million on the line, you know. So I think both teams gave a fuck in that game because there was an awful lot of money on stake. I also do think that the third place decider at Chengdu was tough to be motivated for, both if you're Maus and if you're Falcons, yet they still went in there and they won the game and they did it convincingly on the third deciding map. So if Falcons being a shit team is them placing third every single time and getting into semifinals while having us talking about them being the best playing team at the tournament up until that point, then of course they can win the major. Of course they can be a threat to pretty much any team. And I think saying otherwise is just being delusional. And I even like saw people have arguments and trying to make the case that, yeah, it's more likely Spirit wins the major. It's more likely Maus wins the major. But based on what, you know, in terms of how they play right now, in terms of the peak, in terms of, as you said, Monesi being back to his best, Nico finding more comfort in his more laid-back role where Kiyosuke has taken some of his spots, Kiyosuke, who seemingly gets more and more stable as well. I think there's a lot of things that are still pointing in the right direction. And I don't think we've seen the best of the Falcons. And there's still some untapped potential. So making a case for them not being one of the favorites to win the major, I can't even do that, you know, even though I would like the task. You know, I don't see how that's justifiable, saying that, nah, you know, the best they can do is a quarterfinal, or the best they can do is a semifinal, because that's not the case when you have so much talent. Now, they have an issue, and that's Inferno, first and foremost, being part of the map pool right now. Monesi seems to be struggling on that map in particular. T-side, we saw it against Maus. I think he had a half with 0 ADR, which is something I've never seen before from any player, let alone Monesi, who's in the shape of his life right now. They've been losing Inferno to a couple of these top teams. And then also Tessis. I feel like Tessis was the guy who actually, you know, stepped up when Monesi came into the team the first time around and stepped up before QC joined. And he's been pushed into a lot of uncomfortable roles for him, a lot of new learnings, and his level is not as high as it used to be. You know, he's not an anchor player. He's not really the player that he's being forced to be in Falcons right now. So when you have one of the three star players not showing up beforehand, you then had Tessis being a super, super solid fourth guy, you know, and sometimes even the second best, or maybe even the best in certain of the grand finals. And that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. There's not the safety net that they used to have in him. So those are the two main concerns I have. If Tessis can't find his footing in that role, then you lose a safety net at the very least. I'm not saying Tessis is not good enough to be part of the Falcons, but he's not good enough to be a safety net for a Nico dropping the ball or a Monesi dropping the ball or whatever that may be. And then Inferno and the map pool in general for Falcons could be better as well. But they have Hong Kong now coming up. They have, whether it be 2 weeks of practice before they step into the major in stage three. So I can't see why they shouldn't be one of the favorites. And also, I will say, this whole, you know, just to contest some of these arguments against Falcons, yes, the whole, you know, Saudi angle, et cetera, et cetera, I can't really speak about that because you can hate that for a lot of different reasons if you want to. But the money angle is like, we praise Furia now. We're so happy about Furia. Let's not forget that Furia were a top 15 team, top 20 team, and they paid Quezarato an awful lot of money. They paid Yuri an awful lot of money, and they signed Fallen for an awful lot of money. And they were shitting around top 15 for 2 years, doing absolutely fuck all, having arguably maybe a top three, top five budget in the world. So if you want to play the money angle versus Falcons, or if you want to play the money angle versus Astralis, I get that. That's fair enough. But then you got to apply that principle to all the teams throughout the history. And Furia was spending an awful lot of money doing fuck all, the same as Liquid has been doing for quite some time, the same as Astralis has been doing for quite some time. But I have never, ever heard anyone say that was an issue. I never heard any fan, any pundit, any expert, whatever, raise that as a concern.
Yes.
Apparently, that was just, you know, that's cool. Yeah, Fallen is a big brand. Spend all the money you want. But you're applying the same logic to all other teams. So why does Furia go off that now? We can use that now because they're actually performing. Finally, they're getting something out of the value. But for 2 years, they were paying Quezarato, Furia, Yuri a substantial amount of money, and they got absolutely fuck all done. So if you want to play that card against Falcons, Astralis, Liquid, then do it to Furia as well when it's not working out.
I also think it's like mildly unfair in this sense. If you want to look only at the Falcons side, like that is funny when you mention how many millions, because obviously the real reason it's so high is because they bought like two or three different cores of teams. That's the real issue, is that they had to start over again. By the way, that's happened many times in both Counter-Strike and sports itself. Like some of the top Premier League teams, I mean, all of them basically at this point spend loads of money every single season, whether you win or lose, because everyone else does. The part I think is unfair is this, though, is people do act like you're an idiot for spending all that money. It's like, no, but because this is the thing I always made the point of. It's like, it's not your money, though. Like, I actually love that Falcon spent all that money. Like, I do want to see Nico and Monacy on, like, a super team with Casey. I think that's a super exciting prospect. Like, the real problem I have is this. It is really unfair on the other angle to turn to Vitality with Ziwu and Spirit with Donk and go, just get your own one of those. It's like, they aren't fucking available. Like, those two teams, by the way, you know, you're aware, if you actually listen to what people say in interviews, they got lucky both. Like, one, Vitality got lucky that at the time in the French scene, one, Kenny S was scared Ziwu would take his AWP, and two, they thought he cheated. So that's the reason why G2 didn't get him in that year when, remember, instead they got, like, fucking Smiths in Existence back that year, bro. Like, they absolutely could have just said to themselves, hey, we'll have that Ziwu guy, and there might never be a Vitality right now. They might just be some, like, also, that they might be, like, Gentle Mates or something, or just some fucking team that's, like, who knows if that's a big squad. And then the Spirit one's the same story. Donk himself said he could have joined like Na'Vi Academy or something. If he joins Na'Vi Academy, there is no Donk in Spirit at that point in time. Maybe it's like Art Frost and fucking Kiyosuke or something, you know. They might still have some good players, but the point is, there's no like, if we just ignore you having one of the top three players in the world, then you're doing a great job with that, because that's another problem, Pimp. I can tell you right now, I know Rops. The reason Rops joined Vitality is called Ziwu. Like, it wasn't Vitality Org and the meeting they give you and the jersey. Here's what we believe in as a team. No, it's mainly because you had Ziwu and he wanted to go play with him and win everything, bro. So it's also not as easy. Like, those teams all need a bit of luck. And once you have the first piece, you can do a lot with it. Now, by the way, you could actually now argue the same for Falcons. They don't actually have to overspend. Now that you've got Nico Monacy, in theory, if you do it right as well, you could also now put it down to normal market value. You don't actually have to spend like that. So I do think that's a bit unfair. Let's spin it, though, because it's actually inappropriate. Oh, go on. If you have a point, go on.
No, I agree, you know, and it's fair. It's not that the money argument is not a fair conversation to have. It's just that when you actually see the results, you know, right now from Falcons, you see how they've actually progressed now to become a team that maybe they should have done that a year ago. Maybe it took them a little more money, and maybe it took them a little more time than needed be, you know. But they're in a position now where we have them as one of the teams that could potentially win the major, could win Blast Rivals Hong Kong, could win trophies, you know. So seemingly it worked, you know, and that's the same angle I want to put towards Furia, you know. As I said, like, I've never really used the argument. I never really, you know, publicly criticized Furia on a desk segment for spending too much money on Quezarato and Yuri and Fallen. I thought to myself that, listen, they're not getting the results that you were supposed to get when you paid the players this much. But I also get the angle of running a franchise or running a club, you know, where having Fallen, you know, you just sell a lot of jerseys, you just sell a lot of course, you have a lot of publicity, etc. So that angle I buy into. But when the teams then start to find success, you know, I don't know why the money angle is being used so heavily against Falcons, because now they're actually finding success. Yes, they haven't won anything yet. And yes, they haven't won that major or the trophy that they probably should be, considering how much they've invested into the lineup. But they have gotten themselves from being a team that was barely in the top 10, you know, that couldn't make it out of the Cologne play-in, you know, with the old roster, to now a team that is well established within the top four conversation and definitely have the potential to be the best in the world. So it is working, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, whether you think it's too much money, whatever, or you don't like where the money comes from, that's fair, but it is working. So that angle of it, I dislike.
This is like, if we want to talk about the upcoming Blast though, because they've got like the big teams there, etc. It's actually a perfect pivot if we want to talk a little bit about Spirit. Because I have to say, holy fuck, of these last two tournaments just tanked Spirit stock. As like, I really thought there was a world. I was going the other way, Pimp. I thought there was a world where if they play exactly the same way, but you just add Teneirin, maybe they just become like the dominant team that no one can beat. Like, because I'm just thinking in my brain, if the Teneirin guy can frag like he did in Heroic and Donk just still does Donk things, bro, you're going to win so many. Get the part of the problem, and this is the really scary thing for me, Pimp, is forget Teneirin for a second. It's fucking Donk that isn't doing his part. Like, of the whole year, this is another one of these players. I've always said this whenever it comes to players like Monacy, Ziwu, Donk. I always tell fans it's actually really unfair that because these guys can just have like 9 out of 10 tournaments, like it feels like every tournament they can play 9 out of 10 CS, we just act like that's the baseline expectation for their team to win the game. And I've always said if that really is true, then actually your team is a bit carried by that guy. Like, we have seen matches now where Ziwu didn't have an awesome time and they still won because Rops had a great game, or Flames went off, or actually the joke at the major was that Apex and Mezzi had fucking carry performances in the final, right? The problem in Spirit always was Donk really did have to have a 1.4 rating like every fucking series, but he could do it, Pimp. That was the craziest part. Like, for some reason for him, that was like, okay, boss, yeah, here's your 1.4 rating, which is like, what? But the craziest thing with this Teneirin roster is, mate, as they're struggling with all the rest of, you know, adapting the player, in amongst that, Domp's numbers are way lower now. Like, he's having, again, this just shows how cracked he is. Over the last month, he's like 1.19 rating, which again, yes, I understand for anyone who's like outside the top four is fine. That's actually a good rating. Like, there's players we could talk about in other teams that would love to have that. But for him, that actually means he's shit in the bed. Like, that means something's going wrong, you know? What do you think of, what's this angle? Because I have to say, the more it goes on, like, I feel like if they don't do well at this event, bro, we could be looking at a Spirit failure at the major, never mind winning it. They could be a team suddenly that might not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're in danger of that too. I agree. I think they need a success in Hong Kong, you know, and a success could be just a semi-final, you know, or competitive semi-final.
Yeah,
agreed. Or competitive semi-final losing to Furia Falcons or whatever. But they need to be competitive, yeah, and have a sense of, okay, we play a little bit better, then we can beat them next time at the major. But I agree. I think they changed too much. You know, I think Teneirin coming in, I don't see that signing as a bad signing because I agree he's individually such a strong asset that you can find a way to make that work. I think the Sway kid is yet to be, like, he hasn't done enough to be completely honest. Like, he's yet to be justified, you know, coming.
Bro, if you could sit them down with like a lie detecting drug so they can't like tell a lie, bro, I feel like they would just even admit, like, yeah, we shouldn't have done that signing. Like, that was like, we overcooked the roster. Like, I think if they could really go back in time, Pimp, all they wish they did is just take Teneirin and then probably just remove, like, Magics or something and then maybe even keep something. I don't know which one they would pick, but I feel like they would just undo that one move because I feel like the rest of the move is probably what they wanted, and even makes sense long run. But I don't know if I believe that they really did want this way guy. Like, that feels like some... Put it this way, the joke would be, I mean, I'll give you the obvious football analogy. It happened to my team. We didn't really want Ekotike. We got Ekotike because we thought we couldn't get Isak. And then the joke is we got both in the end. And by the way, the same problem is happening in Liverpool. The problem now is, well, which one should we actually have? Like, can we have both at the same time? That's the issue. You sort of did that in Spirit. Like, I feel like you got this way guy because you didn't get the Teneirin moved on. And then you were like, fuck, is this going to happen or not? But you wanted to have a new player because everyone said, that roster can't win anymore and it hadn't won the major. So, do you know, what do you think? Do you think the same thing? Do you think they actually wanted to win? Do you believe that angle?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it was smart and necessary and not something they necessarily wanted to happen. I think they wanted the change, you know, for some reason.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Fair enough. But I think the change they would have wanted from the get-go would have been Teneirin, but probably some contract issue, roster lockdowns, et cetera, made that impossible. And then if they had to change at the moment where they had a timing, then it had to be Sway. And one could also argue, I mean, they won Cologne and they won the Blast... Blast Bounty as well. Season two, you know, two tournaments in a row where you think to yourself, okay, if you win trophies, you win Astana as well. And given Astana wasn't necessarily that heavier of a field, you still won 3 trophies, you know, in the span of 3 or 4 months. So it's not that bad with Sway, but then again, it is when everyone else is ramping up and everyone else is getting better for the major, I feel like Spirit have just stagnated or maybe even declined in level, and that's the issue. And then when you... I agree, Donk maybe not hitting his mark right now, and Donk should and could do more. He'll probably be the first to admit that. But part of it, I also think, stems from the fact that you change two players, you know, because one thing is changing one player and bringing in one guy who's a little bit inexperienced. You can clearly see that Dunk is visibly frustrated sometimes towards Tinea, towards Sway, whenever they do a peek or whenever they do something in a clutch or whatever. And I think that also plays in as a factor, whereas he may not have liked Magisk and Suntix and their individual level from time to time. He may have felt like we need some stronger players or a stronger aimer. But I think Dunk is also, you know, and Spirit as an organization is also young and probably underrated the fact that, yeah, they may not be the best individuals, but you'd rather have a guy who's a little less, you know, good individually, but who doesn't fuck up Dong's game, who makes sure that Dong plays at the absolute highest level, than having a player that is maybe 10-5% better than Suntix or 10-5% better than Magis, but then will go in and interfere a little bit with Dong and make him more frustrated and make him more uncomfortable. Because, you know, losing 5% of Dong is losing more than 5% of a guy like Magis or Suntix. And I think they potentially underrated that aspect a little bit. And then again, you know, it's impossible to know whether or not that's the reason why Dong is not playing up to par. But I do sense that whenever I watch them play and whenever I see, especially the player camps, like Dong seems... He's always been frustrated, but he seems visibly frustrated with some of the decision-making coming in from some of the rookies, which is fair enough. You know, I don't hold that up against the rookies, but that's what you kind of expect when you bring in two new guys who is relatively unproven. I know Tinea played in Heroic, but that was also for a short stint.
Yeah, that's played true. But anyway, even when he had those numbers, bro, he wasn't, as you say, like in the big semis of a big arena. Like, it's true, we haven't seen that yet. We don't. That's a new test for him.
Listen, he had big numbers in Cologne playing, in Katowice playing, you know, and that's about it. So it is new for them. And I think you said it pretty well. They overcooked the roster. And I think if they could go back in time, they would have made one change. Ideally, that would have been Tinea if timing would have allowed it. And then kept, Magisk or Suntix. I'm still not sure with the whole Suntix thing, if that was actually them wanting to replace him or if that was more some visa stuff, some personal issues or whatnot. But I'll tell you this, if they don't have a great major, if they don't make the semi-final at the major, if they don't win the major, go to the final, I think we'll see Suntix and or Magis back on Spirit 26, makes and then I think Sway will be the one who gets cut.
By the way, I'll I'll give you another Liverpool analogy. That if people aren't watching the Premier League right now, that's all Liverpool's done. They just went back to as many of last season's players as they could to figure out like what the fuck, what went wrong with adding all the other ones in. So they're just trying to remove as many variables. And I'm with you. I think if you have a bad major, you just bring one of them back, mate. Exactly for that reason. In fact, let me ask you about that, because that's one thing I think is actually probably very underrated by casual fans. The one area, you know, when we always, I mean, the terminology in Counter-Strike used to be, this is if you're at HLTV forums run a team, they would make, the joke is, this is why it's so hilarious they all hate Falcons. They would make Falcons. They would add like, you know, three aggressive riflers in one team because they also don't understand the fucking, the role. In fact, the joke is that's why they must love that money ball, because supposedly baseball basically is 1v1 in most of the positions, right? So that's why you actually can just stack like star players and you might have a really awesome team. The problem with games like Counter-Strike is it's more like hockey or something. There's like an art to it and how you play off each other and who plays in what way and how this guy plays on the field over here affects the space over on this part. Like, we have elements in Counter-Strike that are counterintuitive, actually. And one area I've got to say, Pimp, is I know exactly what you mean about Donk. I think the most underrated aspect is this is what I'll ask you about. I've had this happen many times in my own career playing games semi-competitively, especially at decent. Is one, if I was ever the best player or one of the better players on my teams, I just learned exactly what you're talking about, Pimp. Actually, when you have all these responsibilities and you know you have to be the best anyway, actually, you will immediately accept the compromise of a guy on your team who's clearly nowhere near as skilled, but they know that they're not like a star player. And they just do their fucking job, mate. In fact, they just do. Ideally, I don't need any flash from that guy. Just really do some, like you say, some boring shit thing. Watch the flank, be the bomb carrier, always have the smoke extra that we need. The shittest things in the game that you get no credit for, no one cares. That guy, oh, mate, I'll accept that guy being like 20% worse fragging, etc. But I know what you mean. The problem you have is, so I do think, by the way, it feels like both Magics and Zontix had that to Donk. Like, he seemed super comfy with that roster, mate. Sure, it required him doing a 1.4 rating, but for whatever reason, mentally, he was handling that, mate. It seemed like that didn't break him. But I know what you mean. It's almost like, because these other two players both have, like, a way higher expectation of how good they're supposed to be at the game, not just fragging, you'll notice. I actually feel like that's more unforgivable. Like, people expect, it's almost like, hey, we shouldn't have to accept anything about you guys. You guys should just do their jobs and frag, And then with the super team, we win all the tournaments. Because I'll tell you what, right now, if Donk goes down, like you say, even 5%, mate, this team looks like half as good. Like, forget it. I know what you mean. Like, at that point in time, you'd immediately say, please come back, Magics. Like, if it means Donk's level goes, maybe he does give us a better chance to win. I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, I think it's part of the reason, right? And it's something that's so hard to quantify in Counter Strike, because it's even the players and us, you know, or coaches themselves, like, they don't know, you know, they have to walk around to find out, in a sense, you know. Yeah, eventually you have to try to make those moves and then realize, okay, it didn't work out, and then maybe revert back, as you said, bring back a guy like Suntix or Magisk. I will say though that it's also it's a player quality that I think is fun to talk about when we evaluate, you know, who's the goat of the game. Like, what made Simple potentially better than Saibu? What makes Saibu better than Simple? What makes Donk better than those two? I think there's player types. The best example I can give is Elise, you know. Elise relies on having structure around him. Elise relies on knowing what teammates are doing, not necessarily flashing for him or throwing bodies for him or something like that, but like visually he needs to understand what they're doing so he can base his decisions off that and then, you know, do the right plays at the right timings. And he's not necessarily a great puck player. He's not a great player that thrives in when everything is just chaos, you know. That's when you get to see the worst of Elise, which was kind of the case in FaZe. He did okay, but it wasn't the Elise from Complexity, where he knew exactly what was going around him at all times. I think that's one of the best arguments I can use to say why I think Simple potentially would be the GOAT of Counter-Strike, you know, compared to Saibu, because I think Simple thrived regardless of that. Like, he could thrive in structure, but he could also thrive when it was just an FPL game. It didn't matter to Simple. He would just do whatever the fuck he wanted to do and then still be the best player. And I think the same could be said for Saibu, and maybe we're learning that about Donk now as well. Saibu relies a bit on structure. Saibu relies on a guy like Apex. And essentially, we don't know, because we haven't seen Saibu outside of the Apex era. And maybe one time we get to see that. And I would suspect that Saibu is the type of player that functions significantly better when there's structure around him, because that's all he's ever known. So that would be a fair assessment. The same could be said for Donk. I think right now maybe we're at a time where we get to learn about Donk, you know, where his limitations are. Maybe if there's not enough structure around him, maybe if there's too much inexperience around him, maybe if there's two players who come into the team who's not willing to sacrifice for Donk, or who's not as great at communicating as maybe Magisk and Suntix were. Because I think that's two underrated factors as well, that from all I heard is that Magisk in particular and Suntix were great at communicating, great at, you know, telling teammates what was going on and constantly giving them the, I guess, the foundation to make the right decisions and make the right rotations in the game, and by then putting Donk in prime position. Maybe we're learning that Donk is still, obviously, you know, a fantastic talent, but he has limitations in that regard. He's not going to function as well as he could be unless there's structure around him. So that's my angle on it. You know, I find it super, super interesting, and I find it interesting to see how Spirit, how Donk, how Helly is going to try to fix that, whether that is bringing back Suntik, Magisk, or maybe schooling Sway or schooling Tinea to be different players. I don't know, but I feel like that's the one thing where, if you want to talk old school Counter-Strike, where Simple really stood out, it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter if you had structure, it didn't matter if you had the blade system around him. He would just perform at an incredible high level anyway. It would even be to the case that in certain games where Simple would make the decision, it's 11-11, okay, it's 11-11 against the team we should be beating, so the blade system doesn't work, I'm going to go outside the system, I'm going to play even better by now. I don't see the same thing happening for a guy like Saibu or a guy like Donk. You know, I've literally only seen Simple be able to do that, and maybe occasionally Nico as well in G2, you know, where they set themselves outside of the system and perform even better. So that's a player quality that is incredibly hard to quantify, but the best example I can give is Elise. He only works when there's structure, and I would say the direct opposite for a guy like Simple. He probably works better when there's no structure. So maybe Donk finds himself in that rough period where he has to figure that out, which also makes us forget that he's, what, 18, 19 years of age. He's still
barely,
you know,
finished being a rookie himself, mate. He's only on year two. We do all forget that. Yeah, true. We all act like he's had a 10-year career and he's done what Simple as he did and been number one for like 6 years. So it's true. We don't give this guy any like grace to be an 18-year-old kid who is still figuring out. By the way, there's another thing I was going to point out. I can even give you an example. So right now, HLTV did that thing again where they do the 10 nominees for the Hall of Fame. And they've already decided them. It's going to be like Kogu, Markov and Olaf Meister. But one of the 10 nominees, one of the all-time great players in Counter-Strike, was the American AWPer, Fraud, from Complexity back in the day. And I can tell you, because Lopez was his team captain at one point in time, one of the things about Fraud was, actually, he was this type of a star player, mate. He had his own peculiarities, and one of them was, because he was a sniper, if he's sitting watching an angle scoped in, he always wanted a teammate that essentially, like, is almost like a bodyguard, like, they watch his back, or no one can ever flank him on train, or something like that, you know, because it's not... Oh, look, obviously, that has no relevance to whether whether he can hit left mouse and hit the shot. But it means for him, that's something that maybe focuses on him. Maybe his focus when he's doing this is like, oh, fuck, is there a person flanking behind? Should I check that quickly? Should I check back? What if I check back and then they've set up the counter-op angle? Fuck, I had that. So for whatever reason, that was just a minor weakness of his that he wanted to have the peace of mind. But it meant that on his teams, same angle I'm giving the donk one here, maybe on his teams, he can't just have five players on CT side in this case that play normal positions. Maybe one guy has to sort of be overloaded to Frod to make Frod better at the game. Like, I could easily believe that, because the reason why I think this is a fair discussion to have, Pimp, and isn't just saying, like, bring back last season's players like Liverpool fans basically do, is because there's actually, like, a very good technical reason, which is one of the reasons a lot of us wanted those two players to be the ones that might be removed, Zontics and Magics, is because Magics really did just do shit like just fucking farm guns for people and play with SMGs and play, like, janky angles that you wouldn't play if you had a full-strength gun and you were just the best player in the world at that spot. So in many ways, I do feel like people think Magics was kind of like Spirit Sanji, if you think about how they used to use that guy back in VP. Obviously, that's the most extreme example of that I've ever actually seen, where he really was just farming like a pack mule, the fucking guns. But whatever, that we all know why that one was. And then the other one to me is that what people complained about with Zontics is stuff like, oh, he's too static, he just sits there, oh, he just body shots. I'll tell you what, though, that's actually with your donk. You also know that. You know, right, he's going to be there during this part of the round. He's going to kill anyone who comes from a normal... Like, there's actually a lot of reliable things with both those players, Pimp. Even though those sound like downsides, because it's obviously like adaptation or whatever strengths they don't have, which is that they don't have the firepower of Zwayne and fucking Tanir. I'll tell you what, like, in a weird way, if you are donk, that does provide, like, a level of security. Like, you kind of do know what those teammates are going to do. And also, you know those teammates, Pimp, are never going to step on your toes if you donk. Like, they're going to play for you.
Yeah, that's why. It's such an underrated. It's a lovely discussion to have, and I would love to pick some coaches and some players' brain, because I think it's something that people forget to think about. And what comes into my mind is like that. I failed myself as well, I guess, doing my analysis job as good as I could. But seeing Elise being signed to face, playing next to a guy like Boki, that was bound to go wrong. Like those two players just think Counter-Strike completely different. Yes. Like, you never know where Boki. Like, you never understand.
Yeah.
What he does. Like, he plays on his intuition. That's what makes Brokey such a fun player to watch and makes him, you know, so... It makes him a threat to teams, but it also makes him a liability. And I think Elise, in particular, doesn't fly with that. Like, it doesn't work. Like, I think Elise and Rain playing next to each other would work perfectly fine. You know, I think they could be a great pair in terms of defending bomb sites, et cetera, et cetera. But having Elise play next to a guy like Brokey was always going to be shit, because you could never rely. Like, sometimes Brokey would be in boiler with the AWP, and sometimes he'd be sitting on the bomb site, and Elise would be like, where the fuck are you going next round, you know? And then you can base your decisions off that. And I think that's one of the most underrated, but also an important note for people trying to build teams. Yes, you can always get the best talent, you can always get the best players, but you need that synergy. And again, what creates synergy? That's having players who think the game in the same way. That's having players that, you know, is either good at not working in a system or is good working next to a guy like Boki that is a little bit more free-flowing. Or if you realize that you have a player on your hands that needs a bit of more structure, then you need to pair with a guy that thrives under structure if you want the best out of both of them. So I think the whole, you know, team composition is something that's interesting, maybe a point of conversation for another episode as well. But that's what's so fun about Falcons as well. Like, you look at Vitality right now, like, they don't have the best individuals in the world in every single position, but they have the best fit for them, sort of. Like, yes. It makes an awful lot of sense to have Flamesy in that position. Yeah. Messi, the role player. Like, not the best in his role, but up there. Apex, arguably, maybe the best in-game leader, but not necessarily. So they just found, like, a team composition that works out. Same could be said for Mouse. The reason why Mouse has consistently been the second or third best team in the world is not because they have the second most talent in the world. They just have a great team composition. Yes. And then you have Falcons, who are trying to disrupt that system right now. We're in an era where it's team composition that usually wins out, even Furia. You know, again, I'd say that they don't have the most talent. But Falcons are trying to do it in a different way. They're trying to overload the roster with firepower. Spirit have now maybe found inspiration from that. They're trying to overload, you know, the roster with firepower. And seemingly, right now, day and age of Counter-Strike, the way it's being approached, it's still composition of the team. It's still synergy that will win out against teams that maybe have 2, 3, 5% more in raw firepower. That could change. You know, we've seen, you know, back in the days with Envy Us, we saw it with Liquid when they were on their run. You know, they were by far not the most tactical team. They just had the best, you know, free-flowing individual skill on the server. And there will be eras in Counter-Strike where one will work out against the other. And right now, I think we are in an era that if you want to win tournaments and if you want to be consistently good, you need to think about your team composition and how you put together players.